Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Alex Espinosa, and I am the Chief Operating Officer here at Cleveland Clinic Weston.
Alex, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. Before we dive in and talk all of the great things you're doing currently as the CEO of Cleveland Clinic, tell us a little bit more. Give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to that.
Yeah, so I have been in healthcare for 30 years, and my background is imaging. I started out as an X-ray tech and an ultrasound tech, and I have worked my way through the leadership ladder, career ladder, in different organizations, but mostly here at Cleveland Clinic. I've been here for 21 years, and I started, like I said, as an ultrasound tech, and worked my way to become assistant director of imaging, the director of imaging for 11 years. Then I was the senior director of hospital operations, overseeing all of hospital operations for about 4 years. And now I've been the chief operating officer for the last, since about 2019. So almost through all of COVID, I've been in the chief operating officer position.
Wow, that's super exciting. What a journey. And I'm sure you've seen the not only the organization, but the industry in general go through all types of iterations and cycles, and especially the past couple of years with the pandemic, you know, healthcare has been at the forefront of a lot of that. Share some of your thoughts around some of the trends and ideas that really excite you these days, especially in healthcare.
So, you know, I think that the pandemic specifically has really opened many of our eyes to opportunities moving forward. And I think, you know, some examples of those opportunities is on the virtual telemedicine front. You know, telemedicine existed obviously prior to COVID, but I think, you know, COVID really made us look hard and in detail to how can we streamline it. And I think it's provided us as an organization and just healthcare as a whole. Really, I think it fast forwarded the technology, I would say about 5 years, you know, in the sense that now, you know, we have a better understanding and a proof of concept of how telemedicine is an active and a permanent role in delivering healthcare. And another, you know, another lesson learned from the pandemic is our ability as caregivers to provide care and services to our patient from a work from home model. So, you know, right now, about 20% of our healthcare workers, and it's very similar to the industry right now, and not only healthcare, I just think the industry, the workforce industry as a whole has really demonstrated the effectiveness of a work from home a model. And we can get in, we can dive into the details of that, but I think that, the work from home model and telemedicine are the biggest things that we've seen the ability to improve and streamline through this pandemic.
So you've touched upon a few areas that definitely resonate on a lot of levels. I've interviewed the CTO of L'Oreal last year, and something that he said that still resonates, that necessity is the mother of innovation. And in the sense that you've briefly touched upon improving your processes, adapting to the current environments. So just overall building and fostering that culture of innovation that your organization, I'm pretty sure that's at the forefront for you as an executive. Share with us any practical recommendations or insights as far as building that culture of, you know, experimentation almost to be able to continuously improve.
Yeah, I think that, you know, in order to be to provide, at the end of the day, in order to provide world-class care, you have to be innovative. And in order to be innovative, you have to be, you know, you have to be able to take some risks. And, you know, it's not always going to work. And I think that investing capital, investing human capital in some of those innovations from, you know, a hospital at home to you know, monitoring, home monitoring of patients. You know, how do we, you know, access, improving access in our organization? You know, we are constantly investing and looking for ways to improve access to our patients and making it easier, whether it's a web platform, a web portal, whether it's, like I said, technology. You know, how do we improve access to our patients and make it easy for them to want to come to an organization like Cleveland Clinic?
Right, absolutely. And we could probably spend the rest of the episode talking about this because it's such a fascinating space. And at the end of the day, to also, as an executive team, to walk the walk in the sense that, you know, innovation doesn't necessarily always have to be so disruptive, so transformational. A lot of that could be just small improvements to internal processes.
Yeah, you'd be amazed. You'd be amazed that, you know, and when you have the right people, I think it's very important as a leader to be a good listener and to listen to your folks that really are the experts and are really working in the front line. And, you know, having the ability to listen to their ideas, although you may not implement them all the time, at least give them the ability to state ideas and see what works and what doesn't. And I think that not only does that help the overall morale and teamwork, but that gives you credibility.
100%. And as an executive, you've mentioned, you know, the team, you've mentioned top talent. I would imagine that surrounding yourself with the top performers is at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. No. So share best practices that really at least worked for you personally to be able to attract the top talent to your teams.
Yeah, listen, one of the things, John, that I'm very, very proud of, and I think that my record has shown, is the ability to identify talent. And whether it's from external resources or, more importantly, internal resources, I have a track record of having the ability to bring, you know, midline managers onto an executive team, working closely with myself and other executives, and having the ability to mentor them in order for them to be prepared, you know, over the next 12 to 18 months in a larger role. And, you know, I've had my last five administrative assistants have become executives or administrators in my organization, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm not responsible for that. I had a small part of it, but I think that just the inclusion, you know, having them included in meetings and being transparent, challenging them, giving them stretch projects, you know, having them accountable, has really fostered an environment here that allows folks to see opportunities in the future. And I think that we've been very effective. And I think that goes down the line all the way down to the clinical space, where a lot of our advanced clinical caregivers have started out in an entry-level position.
Right. No, that's very impressive. And it resonates on so many levels, because for me, leadership is all about being able to help the people that are on your team to get to where they want to be. How can I pave the way? How can we identify that roadmap for you to get to where you want to grow to? And in the process, identify ways for us to collaborate. So I think that's very unique strategy. I think that speaks to, you know, how you operate as a leader.
Yeah, and I think, John, you know, I also am an adjunct professor at Berry University, and I teach leadership. One of the classes that I do teach is leadership. And I think that it's very important. And, you know, it's not about just knowing the material. It's about having emotional intelligence and knowing how to communicate with different subsets of folks within the industry. I think that skill set, once it's learned, because I do believe it can be learned. A lot of it, it's a lot of it comes from within. Mm-hmm. A lot of it can be taught and can be learned. And I think that those that have the ability to adapt through change management in the ever-changing world of healthcare and have the emotional intelligence to deal with different issues that arise on a daily basis are the ones that are going to have the ability to grow and continue to be successful in a healthcare environment.
So as you attract the top talent, the another area that it's very interesting to me is the interview process, because at the end of the day, I've had my share of really bad interviews and really good interviews. I've been on both sides as a hiring manager and a candidate myself. I'm sure you have. In terms of the way you structure your interviews, tell us a little bit more about that approach. How do you make sure that it's a two-way street conversation? And more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when you talk to candidates?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question, because I just finished doing an interview a little while ago. And, you know, depending on the position that someone is applying for, you know, there's a vetting out process where my administrators will vet out the candidate. They will start doing the interviews, and those interviews are more specific to the job that they're applying for, and it'll have more technical questions about the ability of the candidate. Once that candidate, the final two or three, get to my for me to interview, I think my interview style is really more a conversational piece, making it very comfortable for the candidate. And what I'd look for is, the number one thing I look for is, does this person fit our culture? And I think that, you know, from whether it's clinical or clerical or support service aspect, I think that those traits can be taught, but there's some characteristic traits that cannot be taught, whether it's compassion, empathy, you know. So when I interview, to answer your question directly, when I interview someone, I'm really interviewing the person and I'm judging them from body language and seeing, can this person be taught? Maybe they don't have the experience as other candidates, but do they fit in our culture? Is it somebody that I can work with? Is it somebody that I believe is going to be receptive to feedback, you know, constructive criticism? Or is it someone that's going to come in with their own set ways that may cause disruption? So I think I look, my number one thing is this person going to fit culturally in what the Cleveland Clinic culture is?
As we travel down the roadmap in terms of attracting the talent, interviewing, and then as they start collaborating within your organization, retaining the top talent also adds another layer of complexity, especially in this extremely competitive market that, you know, we've all seen the past couple of years. Share any insights or practical recommendations that really helped you to retain that top talent?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's become a challenge, no doubt. In this, you know, over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of shift in the healthcare world with the pandemic. You know, there's been a lot of opportunities throughout the country for caregivers to really maximize their earning potential when having that opportunity posed to them. So it's no doubt it's been a challenge. It's not unique to Cleveland Clinic, but I will tell you that, you know, I think that prior to the pandemic and what we're getting back to with normal business as the pandemic hopefully goes away is, you know, opportunity, you know. And like I said earlier, I pride myself in saying that the majority of our caregivers that are in leadership positions came from an entry-level position. So, you know, yes, you may be able to go somewhere else for immediate satisfaction from an economic point of view, but if you're looking for a long-term career and you're looking for a company to invest in your future, whether it's providing subsidies for education, you know, training classes, management classes, or even on the job mentoring, you know, I try to sell that as a retention opportunity. I think we all, and probably not even, and it's not unique to the healthcare field, I think all of us have had opportunities throughout our careers to go elsewhere for a quick dollar or for immediate satisfaction, and something has kept us here. You know, and what I try to tell our caregivers is that once you begin, and I say this in our orientation, John, once you start working at Cleveland Clinic, and you have Cleveland Clinic on your resume, people are going to come after you. You know, it's a world-renowned company, has a great reputation. When people get, CVs with a Cleveland Clinic background, they're going to go after you. So what is it that you're looking for? And, you know, what is it that you want out of a career? So we try to use a lot of growth opportunities as a retention tool to really engage our employees.
Right. Absolutely. No, that's very powerful. And you were right, especially in the current market conditions with so many opportunities out there for, you know, candidates on the global scale these days, because there's no geographical restrictions anymore. But at the same time, competition 10x as well, because companies of various size are targeting the same candidates. So it's always a challenge. And I can definitely relate to on so many levels to be able to retain the top talent. That's very unique. So how are you just personally preparing yourself for the next period with so much unknown, so much ambiguity in terms of where just not only pandemic, but overall where the markets are going and a lot of the things that are happening in the world? What are some of the things that you're doing as a leader to be able to prepare yourself so that you can adapt to any type of change out there?
Yeah. You know, so some of the things that we're doing, you know, I think that, you know, the successful companies, whether it's in healthcare or in any other field, the successful companies are the ones that are nimble, the ones that can adapt to change quickly. And with the pandemic, not knowing if there's going to be another phase, you know, outside of the initial phase that we had with the pandemic and the Delta, you know, is there going to be another wave where we're going to have to adapt? But aside from that, we're looking, you know, what keeps me up at night is how do we get back to normal business? You know, there is a caregiver shortage. No, it's not a secret. How do we recruit to make sure that, you know, my belief is that January 1st, you know, I'm looking at 2022 as the target to go back to normal business. You know, thankfully, the pandemic has subsided here in South Florida. It's not gone away, but it's getting into these controllable numbers where I think that we can get back to normal business hours, really promote, how do we promote a safe environment for patients to feel comfortable? Because one of the things that we've seen throughout the nation and throughout the world is that patients have, you know, deferred their annual checkups or care in lieu of not wanting to come to a hospital. So there are folks that really need healthcare that have really not wanted to come to a hospital, even though we believe the hospital is probably one of the safest places to be at because of all of the measures that we've taken. How do we promote a safe environment? How do we encourage our patients that haven't come for their annual physical for a couple of years to come back? How do we communicate that? And more importantly, when they are ready to come back, how do we allow and improve access? We cannot have any barriers. We have to allow folks, when they want to come see a doctor, come see the doctor in a timely fashion. So we're having those discussions now to mobilize to be ready when the patients start coming back, which they have been.
Right, right, absolutely. In terms of the role of technology in healthcare, you briefly mentioned telehealth, e-health, virtual checkups. Tell us a little bit more about the role of technology that plays, you know, in your organization. What are some of the technological advances that you personally very excited about?
Yeah, I think that, you know, telehealth has been, like I said, a huge, huge advancement. You know, how do we foster that into areas where right now we don't have a lot of presence? I think that we're looking at, you know, geographic areas that maybe a patient's not willing to drive to come to Cleveland Clinic in Weston. You know, we're looking from a strategic point of view, where our catchment rate is going, where is our radius to capture patients. So using that technology, how do we from a healthcare organization allow the elderly population an ease of use from not only a telemedicine, but from a portal platform? You know, we have a portal platform called MyChart, which allows patients to get schedule appointments, communicate with the doctors, they get their test results. It's a very robust platform that allows patients to basically manage their care from their phone or from their computer. The question lies, and I use personal experience because of my mother, you know, my mother or my father-in-law, you know, that generation really doesn't understand technology. And how do we educate, or how do we simplify the platform using technology in order for them it to be effective? So we're looking at innovative ways to simplify, you know, the ability for this patient population to have ease of use and to have access to those type of portals that will allow them to communicate with their doctors, see the results, you know, because of course, just imagine, you know, if they get a result that's a normal result, you know, that may save them having to make 5 phone calls to get a result when they have it in front of them. Even though we do make the phone calls, you know, it's still an added layer of, you know, comfort for the patients to have the ability to see everything that's happening in their healthcare continuum of care. But how do we make it easier? So we're looking for innovative ways to make it easier for our population.
Shifting the conversation a little bit more towards on you as a person or you as a leader, first question I have is, what's your content diet looking like these days? What are the sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed, educated on all of the things happening in your industry?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I think that there are many avenues that I use to continue to keep up to date of what's going on. I think it's very important to become, you know, part of associations. So being in tune with associations like American Healthcare, the American Healthcare Association, American Hospital Association, the Florida Hospital Association, you know, we're on calls with my colleagues, other COOs from Dayton Broward, with ACCA, which is our state regulatory body. I think that's a great avenue. I think that there's a lot of literature out there that I constantly read from the advisory board. Is a great source. The New England Journal of Medicine, that's a famous journal. There's a lot of information out there. But I think that using you know, the social platform with colleagues and going to conferences is a great way of seeing what others are facing, you know, similar to an organization like ours. You know, I really believe that we're in it together. I really believe that this pandemic has really enlightened a lot of us, a lot of the leaders in Dade and Broward, to say that we're in it together. And, you know, there's competition obviously for the patient, but I think that this is really exposed us to what teamwork can do, and working together of sharing resources, equipment, vaccines, you know, that type of conversation and the work. You can imagine, John, the collaboration that I've experienced through this pandemic. It's been enlightening, and I've gained a lot of respect, or more respect than I had for a lot of the leaders in our fellow hospitals. And that's where I get my drive, and I've gotten a lot of information. I've learned a lot over the last couple of years.
Speaking of learning from other leaders, it's something that I'm very passionate about when it comes to mentorship, being an advisor, paying it forward at the end of the day, things that I have learned, things that, you know, helped me succeed. Who do you consider to be your mentor, and what did you learn from them?
You know, it's funny because, you know, although, of course, you know, people look at TED Talks and people look at famous speakers that talk about leadership, you know, I have found my, you know, my calling and my, I think the biggest influences have been local leadership. You know, I've had local leaders throughout my career, and I happen to still have letters from them that are 15 to 20 years old. That, you know, and one of them was Ken James. You know, Ken James was my imaging director when I was an ultrasound supervisor, and he exposed me to a lot of management opportunities. And he sent me a letter before he left saying, you know, Alex, I think, you know, you got what it takes to become a leader. I would encourage you to pursue that. And, you know, that really affected me. So, you know, although we all look at, you know, the Buffetts of the world and, you know, those type of leaders, I really, really have found my calling and really been influenced by local leadership. People like Ken James, you know, I've had leaders throughout my career personally that have really shaped the person that I am.
That's very inspiring. Thank you for sharing that. And Alex,
and I hope I hope, John, you know, like I said, through mentoring, I hope I'm doing the same to the folks that work for me now.
Right. Absolutely. That's an important element to that. Last but not least, what are you currently reading? And what is one book that you always recommend to others? And why is that?
Yeah. So I'm actually reading a book right now. I have it here and it's called Zero Harm. And it's basically how to achieve patient and workforce safety in healthcare. You know, one of the things that we strive for is, you know, not zero harm to a patient. How do we, which is part of our pillars, how do we provide quality and safe care to our patients? You know, so this book, which I happen to have right in front of me, you know, is one of my go-to books. You know, when I need to be, you know, brought back to a place that of safety, you know, this is a book that is very empowering, and it talks about, you know, how do we provide care in an ever-challenging profession, an environment where there's zero harm to a patient, making sure that we do the right things, that we're doing the right study at the right patient in a quality and a safe environment. And that's what we really, really strive here at Cleveland Clinic. And we really promote, nothing trumps quality and safety. There's no cutting corners. There's nothing that is more important to all of us to make sure that we're providing safety and quality to our patients.
Well, that definitely resonates. Having spent several years on the technology side of the healthcare company as Envision Healthcare, it definitely, you know, I can relate to on so many levels for the patient safety and a lot of the great things that you're talking about. Alex, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was a very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the guests on the podcast is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see if everything that we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Great. It was a great conversation. I'm glad that we met and we'll talk soon.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.